What's up and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. This is your host, Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for joining us today. On today's show, we have on Max Price, head baseball coach at South Salem High School in Salem, Oregon. Max has been the head coach at South Salem since 2017, and you may already know him because of his High School Coaches Club podcast. Max and I had a great time chopping it up, and today we talk about how to build culture in your program, some of the things that he took away from going below 500 last year to setting a wins record this year, and we take a deep dive into giving the culture and a lot of the program to your players. You're going to love this episode with Max Price. Max, welcome to the show.
Jonathan, man, thanks for having me. I appreciate all you do for the baseball world, and definitely honored to be on with you today.
No, absolutely. You know, it's weird that you have like friends that you've never met through, yeah. But you are friends on Twitter, right? Isn't that weird how social media works?
I feel like I know so many guys extremely well, and it's literally solely through Twitter, where if I saw them in person, I don't know if it'd be really awkward because it's like having a conversation in high school with a girl only through text, and then you finally meet her and you're like, right. Oh, this is kind of weird. Or if it would just be like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, this is, we're kicking things off right away. But yeah, I feel the same way. Like, I know so many guys so well, and it's literally only through Twitter, which, you know, for all of the negative parts of it, it's been such a blessing in my life as not just a coach, but, you know, just relationship wise.
For sure. I think the first time I remember meeting Craig Hyatt, I was like, my notifications are on with you, and like I see every single thing that you post, and we've had like a million conversations, but then like the first time you meet him, you're like, oh, this is kind of awkward, like weird, like, or, you know, I think I was talking with somebody and it was Steve Johnson. So like the leg kick nation, you know, and we got together and somebody said, hey, you're leg kick nation, like going through your tag. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so weird.
I was just reading a couple of Steve's tweets the other day, and I was like, man, if I ever saw him in person, I'd have no idea what he looks like, because it's just the little, you know, it's just a picture of his kid in the profile. I wouldn't even know who he was in an airport.
Oh, that's funny. But no, so Max, I appreciate having you on, man. And, you know, we were talking off the mic, and I think, you know, let's start here. So one of the biggest gainers of respect for you is you guys were extremely good this year. I think you set a record for the most wins in a row at your school. Mm-hmm. And flashback 1 year before that, you guys, you were well below 500, I think. And you wrote about it, and you talked about, hey, like, this is what we're doing. This is what we're trying to keep them motivated. And you gained so much respect from me for doing that, because it took guts to be able to do that. And then it just shows you how good of a coach that you are to, you know, to continue writing about that stuff. And then again, I don't know what you did between then and this year where you guys set a wins record, but I would love to know, like, let's flashback, I guess it would be two seasons from then. What was the motivation behind putting that stuff out there? And then just tell us a little bit about some things that you felt like worked with that group, because it obviously translated to the next season to have lots of success. But just kind of take that with you where you may, and we'll just kind of ramble on that for a little while.
Yeah, I can ramble. I think the biggest motivation for kind of posting about it and writing about it, like in a newsletter, and then obviously tweeting about it all the time, was mostly almost selfishly for me to kind of work through that like process of how are we going to turn things around? What is it that we're doing? And ultimately I wanted to be able to have it as not necessarily a blueprint, but like a thing that other coaches and myself could look back on of like, okay, they stayed the course on these items. Maybe they changed these other things, and did it end up working out in the long run? And that year, so it was 2022. So we were coming off. So, you know, 2020, COVID, everything shuts down here in Oregon. 2021, we came back and they let us play like a 15 game season. There was no playoffs. It was a weird deal. And so then last year, you know, I guess, you know, like you said, two seasons ago. So we're talking about the spring of 2022. We ended up with a really, really young group. I think we had maybe six seniors that were, you know, in the lineup on any given day. And then we were starting three freshmen. And I think for me, I wanted to keep track of the fact that I knew deep down that those freshmen were going to struggle. But I thought that the best path for our like long-term success was going to be to toss them into those games as youngsters who may or maybe not, you know, who knows if they were ready, but to just toss them in and stick with them every single day and get, you know, take our lumps and kind of keep working through it and understand that our goal was long-term success. And, you know, I think the first thing I would, you know, think about when if I heard a coach say that, I'd be like, oh, so he's just kind of, you know, like screwing over the seniors, you know, year. Like, well, there wasn't an alternative. So there wasn't like there was another, you know, a junior player who was, you know, coming in who was going to be better than those freshmen. Like we were pretty talent wise, we were pretty down. COVID had knocked out a lot of our youth baseball around the area. And a lot of guys ended up stopped playing baseball. Some guys decided to graduate early. And so we weren't stealing anything from the seniors because there was no alternative. So we just kind of wrote it out. And I wanted to post about it a lot. I think at one point we were 0-6 or 0-7 before we finally got a win. We had to travel like 4 hours down south and we were down by like 6 runs and ended up coming back and beating a team in the seventh and winning for our first win. And posting about it, writing about it, I think is an experience that helped me work through it. And I think it's important to be transparent because like we talked about off air, most of what we see online is the highlight reel stuff. You know, it's the idea of like if I'm posting, you know, a video of a player, it's going to be the player doing something really good, like hitting a home run. It's not going to be a video of him striking out. And so for a lot of coaches, it's the same thing with their programs. I'm going to post the stuff that went really well, and I'm not going to post the stuff that didn't go well because I want people to think that we're really good at what we do. And I think it's more important to be transparent and to show the processes that you're going through, both the good times and the bad times. And you know, through that process, you hope that people can watch what you're doing and learn from it, either by stuff you did well or I don't know, stuff that didn't go very well.
No, and like I said, I had mad respect for you because you had lots of success. I mean, obviously, you had guys in pro ball and going on to Division I universities. Sure. And then, you know, you kept writing about that stuff, too, because you could have focused on the highlights or things like that. And so I really love that too. And I love that, you know, that you you went through that. You were fairly, I'm assuming you were really consistent and that's what led to, you know, what you guys were able to do this year. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, this spring, how that down season, you know, in a wins perspective, but you guys had a ton of growth. And so just understanding how did that lead to the success that you had this year? And then tell us a little bit about the spring.
So 2022 was a culture reset for our program. So in 2019, we had just come off our second consecutive state semifinal loss. And 2 years in a row, both 2018 and 2019, we were in a tie ball game. That score was 2-2. We went into 8 innings in both of those games. And both times we lost on a walk-off infield single, essentially. 3-2. So back-to-back years, we lost the state semifinal game where you're just like, you're an inch away from it and you lose. And it's like, oh God. So we felt really good going into 2020. Like we had experienced players, things were going to be good. And then of course, COVID happens, they're gone. 2021 comes around. We're really young/old. It's a weird mix of guys. Our culture is not really where we were used to. It was a 15 game season. We didn't get to do all the off season stuff we normally get to do to kind of build a team. It was a really bizarre year just because of all the like pandemic related stuff up here in Oregon. And so then in 2022, I at the end of the year, I talked to our seniors about this at our last kind of roundtable at the end of our last game of how all the success we're going to have over the next few years and beyond is because of this group of 2022 seniors and underclassmen that were with us, because they helped reset the culture and get our program back to kind of where we wanted it to be as team, as how we played, as how we operated, as how we interacted with each other. And so that group like reset the way we do things. And although we didn't win, I talked to them about how that's, you guys are the reason that we're going to have success moving forward, right? So then the offseason happens heading into 2023. And I've mentioned this to other people before. Like if you want to have a really good team, like, have really talented freshmen walk in the door, right? We can't, for the most part, most of us can't control that. I can't recruit players. I can't do much about that. A lot of it's just going to be dumb luck. So part of the dumb luck is we had a couple of really good freshmen walk in the door. We knew they were coming. One is a catcher. One is a shortstop. And so those are two really good players to have walking in your door as freshmen who they're really talented. They're both committed to, one's committed to University of Washington now, one's committed to Oregon State University. These are like best player in the state type of guy. So they walked in the door. So that helps. Like, don't get me wrong. And this is an important thing for people to understand too. Like, it's not like we just flipped a switch. Like, now we're good. Like, this is great. Right. Exactly. So there's luck. So we had a couple of kids come in. You know, the other side of that is we had those three freshmen that we started, you know, every game in 2022, they had a full season and they were able to go through some good times and bad times. One of them, he had a stretch of like 42 at bats where he had like two hits, but he was just smoking balls and they kept getting caught. And it was just like, man, at some point he's going to break through. So then like the last month of the season in 2022, he hit like 430. And it's just like, it was fun. Cause all of them at some point reached a point where you're like, ah, they're it's happening now. Like, they're getting used to it. Things are going good. Sure. So we felt really good with those three guys. We felt really good with the two incoming freshmen that were joining the program. And then we had, you know, the guys that were in between, you know, those guys that were going to be juniors and seniors and a couple of sophomores too. And so they, we had guys who were willing to sacrifice some things. So for example, with that really talented freshman coming in at catcher, we had another kid who had pretty much been a catcher his whole life. He played football, had some shoulder issues, so it was kind of becoming difficult for him to catch anyway. He accepted a move to first base with no problem. He's like, yep, I'll do it. I'll move to first base. So we had a senior who moved to first base. And then we had a starting shortstop who had been our starting shortstop for the past two seasons, heading into his senior year. And we kind of talked him through it of like, look, man, in college, your future is going to be in the outfield. And we had a couple of college coaches who had made the same remark. So he kind of understood where he was going. He was a unanimous first team all-league shortstop his junior year, and he accepted with open arms a move to the outfield. We had guys who just got it. They understood that for our team to be successful, we had to make some long-term decisions that had short-term, you know, sacrifices if you're a senior, but those sacrifices that like we kind of talk through, like those are going to make us better and those are going to make you better and those are going to give you better opportunities in college. And so we just had guys that were really selfless, who were willing to make moves for our program. And then we were able to have an off season where guys just showed up. You know, we have workouts and a lot of times there'll be kids gone for different reasons, but for whatever reason, they all really bought into the off-season work. If guys couldn't make it to an off-season workout, and they're all completely optional, it's not like a, you know, it's not even the fake mandatory of like, you know, you have to show up, but not really, but you really do, right? It's nothing like that. It's literally like, yeah, come on out if you can. And guys would show up all the time. And if they couldn't make it, they would tell me like, hey, I'm not going to be there today for this or that. And I'm like, you really don't have to tell me. It's fine. But we just had a group of kids who were really, really bought in. And so then it makes, you know, off-season stuff way more fun. You add in competition, all that stuff, and things get better, the weight room, all that good stuff. And so it was kind of a combination of our culture being reset in 2022. It was a combination of having luck, of having good freshmen walk through the door. And then it was, you know, in addition to that, the commitment to the off season work, where all of this kind of comes together and gels into a season that was really special. I think we were 23-4, I think was the final, record for our program. We
that's great.
Yeah, at some point, I can't remember what the number was, we won 16 17 or 18 games in a row. I can't remember. And you know, the year prior in 2022, we were 6-18. So it felt really good to have it turn around that quickly, but sure. I can't emphasize enough how much it was combined of luck and then seniors willing to sacrifice to make our team better.
Mm-hmm. No, I really like that. And so one of the things that I like to do is put myself in those shoes. Did you talk much about the year before this year?
That's a good question. You know what? We didn't. I've I've been around programs before, as a coach and as an assistant coach and as a player, where you hear a lot about last year. And I think for even in like 2019, when we had just come off 2018, where we were in the semifinals, we didn't really talk about the previous year much either. And we did the same thing this year where we were coming off a terrible season. We didn't really bring it up ever. And I guess for me, it's like, this is a new group. And even though a lot of the kids are the same, a lot of them are different. And not only are they different, literally, they're different human beings that are in the program now, or the kids who are on JV that are on varsity now, but then also as just people, they're, you know, those guys who are still there are different, you know, that you're a different person every year. And so I think we really tried to focus just on now, and we didn't really ever talk about the previous year. And we just kind of turned the page over. I know it's a cliche, but now it's a new year, and we'll do the same thing this year where we kind of flip it over and it's a brand new year. And we don't really talk or focus on anything that happened last year. I think there's a part of me that's always like, man, I remember as a player, like a coach talking about last year, or even that, like, and I don't have anything to do with last year, coach. Like, there's nothing I could do about it. It always reminds you of like when you're on the bench in a game and, you know, a play happens out in the field and the coach turns to you sitting on the bench telling you, this is why we do this and that. And I'm like, coach, I'm not in the game. I'm sitting over here on the bench with you. Like, last year's got nothing to do with me. And so we try, it's not something that we've explicitly talked with our coaching staff about, but I think we all just kind of naturally don't bring up previous years, and we just kind of focus on now.
No, I really like that. And, you know, one of the things that I think you do well is you guys use the off season really, really well. So tell us a little bit about what you're planning to do in the next, you know, month or two. And then when you get back to school and then progress from there, like, talk to us about what you guys are planning on doing this fall and what you can do with restrictions.
Yeah, for sure. So up here in Oregon, there's six different classifications. We're in the biggest one, the big school one, so it's 6A, and I think this applies to 5A too, but in any case, I know it applies to us. So at the 6A level in Oregon, the way off season works is kind of unique, and I think it works really well, and it's a pretty good system. There's some parts that aren't always great, but it's, for the most part, it's a good one, where it encourages kids to be able to play multiple sports, but also allows you to continue working with your guys. And so the basic idea is that we're a spring sport, obviously, we're baseball. So in the fall, when football and the other fall sports officially start here in a couple of weeks, the first 6 weeks from the time that they have their first practice of fall sports until 6 weeks after that is called the closed period. And during the closed period, as a baseball program, we can't do anything that's baseball specific. So we can't go out and play catch. We can't go swing bats. But what you can do is conditioning. So you can go in the weight room. You can run, like you can do any non-baseball specific stuff. Like, we could get them together and we could probably play, like, you know, dodgeball or something like that. Like, so you can do stuff as long as it's not geared towards sport. And then once those 6 weeks are over, it's open season and you can do whatever you want for up to 6 hours a week. You can, as long as it doesn't involve other teams. So we can scrimmage ourselves. We can go in the weight room. We can hit whatever. And then again in the winter, when like basketball and those in wrestling and all that starts, it goes down to closed period again for the first 6 weeks, where again, the only thing we can do is conditioning. And then once that's done, it opens up and we're good to go. So it's kind of a unique system. It's, like I said, 6 hours a week. So it helps kind of prevent coaches from taking up too much time of a kid's quote unquote off season. The first 6 weeks kind of helps prevent kids from trying to specialize in one sport if they don't want to. But also as a baseball program, it's nice because it gives us the opportunity to still meet with our kids and get work in, and then start getting really specific after those 6 weeks in. So for us, you know, kind of the way we attack the fall, it's interesting because you get a lot of kids who play fall ball. So a lot of our kids are going to play, they can't play through us or anything like that. So they'll play through club teams and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we get an interesting mix of some kids who are still actively like playing, even pitching. And then you have other kids who they're just with us. And so it's an interesting group. But we, in the fall, we tend to focus on hitting. It's something we do year round. I've been a part of other programs and seen other coaches who are like, we're not going to swing a bat until like December, January. For us, like the thing we probably are known for is hitting. We're going to hit all the time. We're going to spend as much energy as we can hitting. So it's nothing special. It's individualized, you know, approaches to off-season training that a lot of other coaches do, but we're going to focus heavily on hitting. We're going to focus on individual defensive components. So, you know, sport, you know, specific to your position. And then we're going to get in the weight room. And the weight room, something we didn't really embrace that well until this past year. And one of our coaches, he's somewhat fresh. He's, I don't know, 21, 22, young guy. He takes the kids down in the weight room and runs them through circuits. And so basically the essential way that a fall workout is kind of put together in the open period is where, you know, say we get a group of 30 guys, 15 of them are going to be up in the gym hitting. The other 15 are going to go down to the weight room, and then we'll kind of flip and rotate it. And it kind of goes that way. We'll add in defensive stuff as well, and we'll do that two or three times a week. You know, and then we get to the winter, and once the open period starts back up in the winter, then we really gear up with our throwing programs. And this is where the open and close period thing becomes a little bit frustrating, because everything closes down. I guess it's around Thanksgiving time when basketball season starts. So around Thanksgiving, 6 weeks, we're kind of shut down from doing sport specific stuff. And so about when we'd want to start on ramping arms is exactly when we aren't allowed to, you know, throw anymore. Okay. And so it becomes a little bit frustrating from that standpoint. But like I said, most of our guys play for club teams, and they have private places they go, and they find ways to play catch and get things done anyway. So it doesn't end up being too big of a struggle.
I gotcha. Well, that's cool. So with that, you know, you've got, So is all of this after school too?
It is after school. So we get out at, we used to get out at 2:20, which was, it was magnificent. But now after COVID, they kind of took a step back and readjusted things. And now we get out at like 3:20. So it's a little bit more frustrating having a family now. And you're having to take more of your family time away to be at baseball. But yeah, it's all after school, about 2 hours usually. And in the fall, we get the gym all to ourselves. We don't have to really battle with anyone. It's just us and softball sharing it. It's kind of a hitting facility up in a gym. And then in the winter, basketball takes it. So we end up kind of having to get in the gym after basketball. So it ends up being a lot of times like 6 o'clock at night, or even sometimes 8 o'clock at night where we, until we get in there.
Okay. I love that. So let's rewind a little bit. You know, we talked about what, you know, coaches are going through transitions now. So you've got a lot of coaches that are changing jobs, or a lot of coaches being a head coach for the first time. How would you start? And this is, it's very broad, because you don't, you know, not all of us have the same amount of time, but what would you do in your first couple of months to really set the tone for how you wanted the program run? Or what advice would you give to new head coaches this time of year to do that?
When I first got hired for this, it was back in 2017 was my first spring. So I was hired in like November of 2016. So it was a really late hire. And I did some things that, looking back now, I'm like, that was really dumb of you to do. So I would recommend, like, first, if you're starting in a new program anyway, one of the first things I would do is meet with the seniors. I did not do that. And that was a mistake. And so I'd meet with the seniors and just kind of talk through, how have things gone? What would you like to see changed? If the previous year went great, ask them what components went great. What do you want to keep? If the previous year wasn't great, why? What made it not great? What things might you want to delete? Might want to add, that sort of thing. I think it builds a lot of credibility with the seniors, who then, obviously, just being seniors, not that that's fair, the right thing, but seniors have a lot more sway with the rest of the program and the rest of the kids. And so I think it's really important to meet with those seniors as soon as you can, and kind of get an overlay of it. I think it's important to meet with parents and go at it from a standpoint of asking them those same questions. What's gone well in this program? What would you like to see improved? And then from there, I think it's trying to blend all that information you get. You don't have to implement everything. You need to be yourself. You need to kind of approach it from a standpoint of doing the things that you think are right, but then also combining that with a lot of the information you kind of glean from those conversations. And then other mistakes I made is not knowing when to order hats. Like, I had no idea. I'm like, oh, I got to order hats. That's right. That's probably good. Yeah, like, do we have enough rakes? Like, I don't know. I remember that first year I got to our field the day of our first game and turned the scoreboard on for the first time. And you know, turn the little, and nothing came on. And I'm like, you know, yeah, we got 2 hours till game time, 3 hours till game time. So check your scoreboard, right? Make sure it works. Like, go. So you really have to go through all that stuff early on and figure out what you need to change, what needs to get fixed, what you want to implement. But I think the most important thing and advice I've ever gotten about, you know, the first couple months or even just taking over a program is that you have to be yourself and you have to be okay with doing what you think is right. You're the only one who can make that decision, and you should listen to other voices and you should take in everything they have to say. But ultimately, when you go to bed at night, when you look in the mirror, it's you that everything comes back on, whether that's right or wrong. It's just the way it is. So you got to be okay with the choices that you're making, and you've got to be you, and you got to understand that you were hired to be in this role because people believed in you to do whatever it took to, you know, to have this job. And so it's really important that you understand that you're valuable. People want you in this position. They hired you to do this thing, and trust yourself and take input, but really understand that it's you who has to make the decisions and be okay with them when you go to bed every single night.
Oh, it's really good. And I love that advice. And you don't know what you don't know, number one. Mm-hmm. And also, you're not going to be able to do everything at once. Those are two big ones for me. So with that, you know, we've got, you know, a lot of things that will come up. So tell us a little bit about, you know, the standards and rules that you have, and then maybe get into a situation to where you had a player that didn't uphold it and then how you handled it.
Yeah, we do the really, I think it's pretty popular now, but the two rule thing, right, where it's like, don't be late or, you know, be on time, that sort of thing. And then, you know, don't let your teammates down. We try not to write other rules down because then we have to specifically enforce them. So, you know, if I put a rule down that says that, you know, if you're gone from practice, you don't get to start the next game. And that might seem like a great rule, but then what happens in a situation where a kid's on his way to school or his mom's taking him back to school after a dentist appointment or something like that? They get in a car accident. Kid's fine. They're safe. Everything's okay. But they can't get to practice because they literally just got in a car accident. What happens if the kid has to go to the hospital because his mom ended up there? What happens if his, you know, his sister's having a baby and he needs to be in the hospital to go see her? So a lot of things come up where then all of a sudden, like, well, it's written down, like, I have to enforce this rule. And so I think for us, and the way it works for me, is not writing rules down tends to be the best thing. We have standards. So we have five like pillars in our program. They're pretty simple. We don't necessarily, we don't like ask players to memorize them or anything like that, but we just talk about them and mention them and try to encourage the things that bring these pillars out. And so the pillars are, number one, play with passion. So, you know, when we kind of say, like, if a kid comes and watches you play baseball today, they should leave going, wow, that kid loves baseball. Like, that guy loves baseball. I want to be like him. The second one is process over outcome. It's, you know, it's pretty simple stuff. Just, you know, focusing not, like we talked about before, the kid who's like 1 for 42 his freshman year for the first month, like, focus on the process. The outcome will take care of itself eventually. Three comes from, you know, Jocko Willink and Leif Babin, who wrote the book Extreme Ownership. So number three is extreme ownership, because I think it's one of the most important things of just taking responsibility for everything that happens in the program. And it's, everything is our responsibility, right? Four is better than yesterday. So always being, you know, focused on improving. And then five is kind of our staple one. And this is the one that we put on shirts and hats and jerseys. And, you know, it's a hashtag we use all the time. And it's lift when you climb. And, you know, there's two parts to it. So there's the first part of, you know, the obvious thing of, as you climb the ladder of success, it's your kind of job and duty to reach down and pull the rest of us up with you. And on the flip side of that, and one we talk about even more, is when other guys, teammates, are doing well and they're advancing up that ladder, you have to be okay with them reaching down and grabbing you. So if you're not upholding a standard or something like that, you've got to be okay with them reaching down and upholding you to that standard and pulling you back up. And so, you know, you asked of like a time where maybe a standard wasn't upheld. I there's obviously a bunch that come to mind over the course of time. And hopefully, as you know, a program continues, you get less and less of them, but that doesn't always happen that way. I think there's a cool thing here in town. We live in Salem, Oregon, and there's a kind of a non-profit called the Salem Sports and Breakfast Club. And it's been around since the 1940s. It's one of the coolest things. And every week they nominate three or four athletes of the week for every single sport throughout the course of a school year. And Friday morning, if you've been awarded the athlete of the week that week, you show up, your teammates hopefully show up, your coaches show up, and they go Friday morning before school to have breakfast, and you get your award. And it's kind of a cool thing. Your coach gets to talk about you. Anyway, so this would have been, I want to say 2018, maybe 2019.
Okay.
We had a kid, win one of those. And so we're there on a Friday morning, and it was always kind of funky because the ceremony would end and school would start like 10 minutes later. We're like 10 minutes from school, so there's no way kids are going to be back in class in time. So then, I send out the email to the staff letting them know these kids are going to be coming to class 5 or 10 minutes late. Please let me know if, they're later than that. We talked to our kids about it. Hey, you drive directly from here back to school, you park, you go to class. And we had one time that year where, turns out 5 or 6 of the guys left the breakfast club, and like teenagers do, they went to McDonald's and they had another breakfast, which is great. Get all your calories. Awesome. But of course they were late to class. And so we found out, I think an important thing for high school coaches to really grasp is that we're the training ground for life. And our job is not to, in my opinion, our job is not to just punish kids and hope that it works and move on. Our job is to teach them how to do the right thing for the long term. I think it was Nick Saban had an athlete. I can't remember the situation, but there was like a time where the media was all upset with him because he was allowing this player who had done something wrong to stay on the team. And he had this whole like monologue where he talked about like, what's the alternative? Like, I kick this guy off the team, and then how does he ever become a productive member of society? Or I keep him here, he stays under our watch, I help him become a better person. And then when he graduates and goes off into life, not only does he have a degree, but now he can be like a productive member of society for the long term. So I think as high school coaches, our job is to kind of mimic that same thing of how often and how many times can I take someone who did something wrong, help them understand why they did the wrong thing, what the right thing is, and why they should do the right thing, and then hold others accountable to that same thing. And so that's kind of the background. And so we had 5 or 6 kids, so we end up just meeting with the whole team. It was after practice that same day, so that afternoon, met with them. We went through our full practice. We didn't mention anything was wrong. We just wanted to have a great practice. Practice ends. We round table at the end of every practice where we just get in a circle, everybody talks, and we move on. And so when it was my turn, the last person's turn, I told them about, hey, here's what happened. Here's what I heard. Guys, I kind of asked if you were part of that group, would you step forward or back or whatever? Guys did willingly. We knew who it was. They all kind of owned up to it. We talked through why that was the wrong thing. We talked through why that's a poor reflection on all of us in the program, why that's a poor reflection on me as a coach, why that hurts trust in not only teammates and coaches, but then also teachers, because now all of a sudden that there's that baseball program again, those kids are coming back late, they're trying to take advantage. So we got to talk through all of that. And that's kind of the approach we take for pretty much everything in our program, is if kids don't already take care of it themselves, and coaches need to take care of it, instead of punishing you, instead of making you do burpees or something like that, we want to kind of talk through it, and we want to get to a point where we're just kind of hugging at the end of it and we move on with our life. And that's kind of the goal. And so one of the better moments then becomes when players do that for each other. So like there's a time, we were playing kind of a rival school here locally. We were up by 9 runs in the 7th inning, and we had a kid on third base, and he tried to steal home, and it was embarrassing. It was awful. It's not a good look. And immediately he gets out, and he gets into the dugout, and immediately one of our seniors pulls him behind the dugout. I never know what they said in that conversation, never how it went, but I knew that I didn't have to address it. I knew that it was done, that it was taken care of. Awesome. And so that's one of the cool things about standards and upholding them is, and trying to teach kids the right way, is that the ultimate goal is for them to then uphold those standards and then hold their teammates, and when they graduate, their friends, their random strangers, to hold all these people accountable to the standards of what it means to be a person. And so those are our 5 pillars, and that's kind of the goal that we have, and why we kind of avoid as many rules as we can and just stick to the standards.
No, I'm with you. I love that. I love the situation. And, thanks for going into that, because, these things tend to pop up and, I love getting to hear about the different situations and why you want to do things, because, you know, you hear, hey, we don't have rules, we have standards, but then you go into the why aspect of it. I love that. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, you get through the winter. Do you guys have preseason meetings? Do you, you know, you talked about individual player hitting programs. Go through, if you don't mind, go through kind of what is that process is like. Do you have, do you like sit down with a player? Is it more of like, hey, you need X, Y, Z, or just kind of give us your advice on how to conduct that without, you know, my biggest thing is time. Like I don't, we've got 40 kids and it's me and, you know, maybe another coach in the fall. And it would be really hard to sit down with every kid for 30 minutes and do that. So I'm trying to get, you know, I think those are important, but I also want to do them efficiently and not waste everyone's time. Does that make sense?
It does. So we do tryouts in Oregon. It's usually like the last week of February, first week of March, that kind of timeline. And so we're not allowed to do tryouts before then. So every workout that we have is technically open. Anyone can show up. And so we get all sorts of kids, some who show up consistently. They wear jeans no matter how often you ask them to put on shorts, athletic gear. Like we get all sorts of kids that show up to our stuff. And we do the best we can to coach them all up and get them a position where when tryouts come along, they can perform and compete and do well. And so we're in the same boat as you, where when you're thinking of like player meetings, by the time tryouts are done, we're trying to be around 45 players in our program, which means if we backtrack to off-season stuff, we have anywhere from 50 to 65 kids that we'll see throughout, you know, those 4 or 5 months. And so, yeah, there's no time. There's no chance for me to have like a formal sit-down meeting with kids. It's just not going to happen. If a kid wants to, great, let's do it. So all of our meetings end up being informal just throughout time. So every time I see you, we're talking through things. Every time I see you, I'm trying to hit on not only your life and how things are going and everything and building relationships, but also sneaking in conversations about, okay, you know, here's where we see you right now defensively. What's your goal? Where do you want to play? I want to do, okay, great. Here's kind of the layout, the plan for that. As we get closer to tryouts, I'm having a little bit more formal meetings with them, but it's still informal in the sense where those meetings are taking place within our workout. So like a kid's hitting, one guy's throwing, the other's hitting, a third guy's standing outside the cage. Cool, I'm going to go stand and talk with that guy. Hey, man, here's where we see you right now. When tryouts come up, we don't need you to prove anything. We've seen who you are. We know all this stuff. All I want you to do is to compete. All I want you to do is really focus on pulling this guy with you. Here's what I want to see out of you as a teammate. So like all of our conversations, all of our player meetings are always informal. They're always held during a practice or during a, you know, workout if it's during the off season. Like you, we just don't have time for it. I'm jealous because there's a lot of coaches that have, I know California does, and I'm sure other states do as well, where they have like a baseball class period at the end of the day. And it's kind of the intro to practice, or sometimes even during the off season, a couple of coaches I've talked to have that as well. And so they're able to have a lot of these meetings and stuff, and we just don't have the time for it. Like it would take forever to get through those 50 or 55 or 60 conversations. And so, yeah, everything's informal. It's all, just check-ins every single day. It's talking to kids in the hallway. It's talking to kids in class. It's just all that stuff that combines to create what would probably be a formal conversation one time that just ends up being informal over the course of, you know, 3 or 4 months.
Got it. No, that makes a ton of sense. And it's so interesting how every state has different rules and tryouts. And it's, I love getting other coaches on it, cause I'm like, okay, I really like this, that they do this, but I really like that we do this. So with that, you know, one of the things that, I really like to ask other programs, and I don't know I think a lot of good programs do a lot of the same things, but we all have things that are like unique to us. So what are some things that you feel like you guys do that are unique to you that you're like, I listen to a lot of, you interview a ton of people and I love your podcast, and you do different sports and all kinds of things. And, you know, I want to know, like, what do you feel like? It may be something that you stole, but you're like, I don't think a lot of people talk about us doing this, or, hey, I stole this that we really like that not a lot of people do. What are some things that are unique to you guys that you wouldn't mind sharing with us?
I'll give you the most unique one first, and it's something that happened on accident. You know, heading into my first year, my first spring of 2017, we had a full offensive sign system. We went in knowing, like, it was during the time of like Twitter where it's like the anti-bunt time, and I was very much bought into it. And we still don't sack bunt ever. We don't even have a sign for it, but we'll drag and push and stuff. But it was during that time where it's like, I have to like lay my flag in the dirt of like, we don't bunt. So we had this full set of signs steal and everything. Anyway, the year ends and, you know, looking at stats, I'm like, we were kind of mediocre offensively. And I had this dream of like, we're going to hit a, you know, million home runs and hit all these doubles and we're going to score a ton of runs. And we just didn't for a lot of reasons. And so then 2018 comes along the next year. We're a better team. All our guys are better. We have two guys who end up getting drafted later in life. And it ended up being like a group of really solid players. And we ended up setting we scored the most runs of any team in the state that year. We scored like 200 more runs than we did the previous year. We averaged, I think, 11 runs a game. And what happened was at the beginning of the year, we're playing I think it's our first game of the year. We're playing a team, Sheldon High School. They're normally a powerhouse. And I kid you not, in the bottom of the first inning, we're up 18-0 with no out still. And I hadn't called a single offensive sign. Like, it was just a guy got on base, then we hit a double, then the next guy hit a home run, then we hit a double, then that guy stole third, then we hit a home run, and then we got a single and a single and a single. And like, all this stuff was happening. And I coach third base, and it's hard to give it up because I love it. And I'm watching this, like, I'm not giving signs at all. So then we go into the second game, and I'm like, let's just try not giving signs again. It goes great. Guys are stealing on their own, and we had implemented the steal bases curriculum and from Matt Tallarico and all that stuff. And so we tried to green light and everything. And anyway, by the time we're five games into the year, like, I stopped giving signs. Like, I told, like, don't even look at me at third base when you get up to hit. Like, just go hit. Don't look at me when you're on the bases. Just go run bases and try to find a way to get to the next one. And that has continued every year. And every year I give the guys our signs. We go over them. We know them. So if we ever got into a game where it's like, hey, I'm going to give a sign, it would be awkward for everyone, but we could do it. But we literally, in a game, we haven't done signs since 2017. And I think that's one of the more unique things about us. We have,
for sure,
we have signs for players to give to each other. So for example, what's one? So like, if you're runners at first and second, and the guys want to double steal, the guy at second base is the one who's making that decision. We have a sign that he gives the guy at first base. He repeats the sign back to him. So they know with each other that they're double stealing, but they might even be doing that without me knowing. The hitter might not even know. Like, only those two guys know that they're about to do it on this pitch. And so we have different signs and stuff for situations like that, where guys are doing it with each other. But that essentially then means that our in-game offense is entirely run by our players, period.
Cool.
I don't have any say in it other than like waving my arm when they're coming around third base. Right. Like, so it's really unique in that sense. And it has challenges. Like, early in the year, of course, we run into things where it's like, hey, man, I don't want to have to give you the steal sign here, but you were at first base for six pitches. You got to see that guy throw six times. He never picked over. Why are you still at first base after all that's done? So, we kind of go through all that, or, you know, a guy steals when he shouldn't. We talk through that. But it's kind of a thing that happened on accident, but it was a combination of the steal bases curriculum from Matt Tallarico, who had kind of the green light approach to running bases. And that kind of accidentally, because of the way that first game went, that bled into like, I'm just going to do like the green light offensive system that we just kind of accidentally came across, where you're just going to go up to bat and you're going to crush things on your own and figure it out yourself. And then it was kind of along that same time, there was a presentation that Andy McKay gave at the ABCA. It might've been a couple years before that. I think it was 2016 when he gave it. But he had this great thing on the 15 seconds between pitches, that like upside, you know, that funnel. And it was like, you've got 5 seconds to like decipher what just happened. And then say, okay, you got 4 seconds to like reset your mind, and then 3 seconds to see the vision of what you're going to do, 2 seconds to be ready for the pitch. And then on one, like, the pitch is coming, we've got a hit. And so for me, it kind of combined that part of like, okay, all the time that a guy's watching me give signs, or if I wanted to do like the number system, all that time that I'm dedicating to this and he's having to do to process all that, that's all time that I'm taking away from him of being able to process the pitch that just happened, figure out the vision of what he's going to see happen next, and then him stepping in the box ready to hit. And so I think the combination of those two accidental things, and then me kind of having the Andy McKay part of my background led to what I think is pretty unique. I don't know of any other programs who have done it here locally anyway, that we don't give offensive signs. And so like this last year, we played a team and their coach ended up emailing me afterwards. He's like, "Hey man, I don't understand. Like what, how, why are guys stealing? Like you're not giving signs or anything." And I was like, "Well, yeah, we don't, they just, we don't, like they just happen that way." And I don't think it's special. Like, I don't think it's like, wow, we unlocked something. I don't think it works for every program. I think just for us and the way it's all happened and the way we run our offense, and it all kind of made this perfect storm. And I think our players really, really love it. Actually, I know they really love it because it gives them complete freedom. And it's that thing that coaches always say, like, practice is for me, games are for you. But like that's legitimately true in our program. Like once the game starts, coaches really don't have any say in terms of like what you're doing on the field.
No, that's really good. So with that, you know, you've got those. What about like you talk about the offensive culture quite a bit. What do you think leads to that? I know you guys say that you hit a lot, but like what goes into you guys scoring so many runs every year?
I know obviously spending all the time hitting, that becomes like a natural emphasis on hitting, like, oh, this guy really thinks hitting's important. So that makes that really easy. I talk all the time to our guys about, if you can hit, we'll find a way for you to be in the lineup. Like I'll sacrifice a little bit of defensive prowess if it means we're going to score a couple more runs. Like we'll kind of make that trade. And so I think the emphasis on hitting obviously leads to better hitting. I think talking more with players about approaches, about how to get their mind right after an at bat or even like a single pitch doesn't go well. When you get into then like practicing and what hitting environments actually look like, it's trying to set up, it's almost like an obstacle course, right? So you're like trying to build this obstacle course for these hitters that they have to overcome. So if it's like, hey, we're going to, in this cage, you're doing it against, you know, hack attack sliders, you're hitting with weighted bats and it's all two strikes, figure it out. Right. So it's like creating environments. It's nothing different that other coaches aren't doing, but it's just trying to be really intentional about creating these different environments for players. And then the fun part is then once the season starts, or even in the off season, you can kind of pick these things up. When you see players overcoming certain obstacles, then okay, I got to make it harder on this kid. Here's what we're going to change. Or like this other kid who's really struggling with this one thing, what obstacles can we create for him to have to overcome? So we stole a lot of it from Driveline. You know, we stole a lot of it from, I don't know, Craig Hyatt from Twitter. It's just, again, the Twitter world's amazing. And so all that, then you combine that with the base running part, right? We want to be really good at running bases. We want to make, it's the typical, you know, every ball hit out of the box, it's a double until they stop you. We're trying to steal and take advantage of big moments in the game. So great times are, you know, after the opposing team gives up an error, that's a great time to steal because they're reeling. You know, after you hit a double, that's a great time to steal third. Like, and then we talked to our guys a lot with base running of, think of how hard it is to get you out on the bases. Like the pitcher's got to deliver a pitch and he's got to be quick enough. The catcher's then got to catch it clean and throw it, right? Then it's got to be a good throw. Guy's got to catch and tag you. All this happens in, you know, X amount of time. And so what we ended up doing is we early in the year, and then we kind of take this off, but early in the year we take our steal times, we have them take a 78-foot lead, or that'd be way too long, a 12-foot lead, and then we take their steal time, which ends up being like 78 feet. It's Matt Tallarico stuff, nothing crazy. And then we end up kind of calculating all that. We post it in the dugout every game for the first few parts of the year, so guys can start to see, like, here's my time. Let's say my steal time's 3.35, so maybe one of our faster players. You know, and then in the game, we write on our little whiteboard that the opposing pitcher and catcher combined for a time of 3.67. So that means like I should steal every single time I get on base. Like there should be no time that I'm not stealing. If I can pick a curveball and everything, it gives me an even better opportunity. But basically, like it's become super obvious to them. And then it doesn't take long for that to become ingrained in them of like, oh my gosh, most high school pitchers and catchers and then middle infielders or third basemen, they're not going to be good enough times to get us out enough to make us stop running. And so I think all that kind of combines to create this offensive culture of, we're going to focus big time on hitting, obviously, and overcoming stuff. And then we're going to run the bases as best we can, because it's a lot of times it's kind of free money.
Oh, I'm with you. No, that's really good. So with that, you know, we've got the preseason. Well, we've got fall. We've got, you know, things that you're doing this off season. So tell us a little bit about, you know, gearing guys up for the postseason. So you know, you go through practices, you feel like you're getting guys ready, and you guys have had success in the postseason. And, you know, what is really the focus there? Like, do you change anything, or just how, like, what, one of the things that I know that you mentioned a little while back that I think is really good was you said you had a coach in high school who would take pictures of where you guys were going. So just like, I thought that was really neat. Tell us a little bit about that. And then just anything you guys do that feels like you have, you know, have had success in the postseason, what has led to that?
Yeah. So my high school coach was Chris Lee at North Salem High School. So I coach at South Salem High School now. He's since retired. So we got to play against each other a few times. It was pretty fun. But he, when I played in high school, he would, this was, you know, 2006, 2007, I graduated. And so this was before you could just jump on social media and find, you know, videos of everyone pitching at every place. Now it's kind of easy to like scout a kid. It's like, oh, I can just look up this PBR video of him, and now we have video of him pitching, so guys can kind of see what he looks like. But so what he would do is he would actually, like, say we're playing an hour north, we're going to play, oh gosh, I don't know, Lincoln High School, and we're going to play at Scavone Stadium. So he would drive up on his own, like on the weekend, he'd go to Scavone Stadium, he'd take pictures of it, or even take a video of it. And then he'd bring it back to us and show us, like, this is where we're going to be. And so you feel comfortable. It starts to make you feel like, okay, that's where it is. Because a lot of times in high school, especially when you get to the playoffs, you're playing often, unless you're highly ranked and you get home games, which is the best way to go about it, but it's not always possible. You go on the road and you play a lot of times, obviously non-league opponents, because you're going off all over the place in the bracket, and you're playing in places you've never been before or never seen before. And so it takes that like culture shock of walking into a place and be like, whoa, this is a big stadium. Like, this is big time stuff. These guys must be really good. Like, they get to play here. It kind of pulls all the like curtain away. And it's just like, here's the field. Here's what it looks like. Here's where you're going to be in the dugout. Here's the view from, you know, home plate, all that sort of stuff. And he would sneak into stadiums and take all these pictures. And I always thought it was really cool. I don't do that for guys, because now, like I said, the internet's so easy. You can just Google every stadium and find pictures and everything like that. So for us, when we prepare for playoffs, we've been all over the place. Year one, we got 10 run in the first round, and we had a home playoff game. And so, oh, that was great. That was fun. We lost 11-1 in five innings. It was miserable. Years two and three, we got three home games in a row. And then in the semifinals, we had to go and play at other places. And then, you know, we had the COVID year and the year after. And this past year, we ended up hosting both games, lost in the second round. So we've kind of been all over. We've lost in the first round. We've lost in the second round. We've been in the semifinals. And like I said, lost both times in heartbreaking ways and extra innings. And I think with playoffs, every team's different. But I think for what's worked for us, I think for the most part is, I think a lot of guys try to make a big deal out of, like, guys, this is just a regular practice. We're just preparing for a normal game, but it's not normal. Like, it just isn't. I think we get so caught up in trying to convince kids that it's just another game. It's a playoff game, but it's just, you're just going out there and playing, just focus on yourself. It downplays the reality. And the reality is, when that game starts or when they're announcing starting lineups, all the butterflies are going to be going crazy in your stomach. You're going to be stressed out. When something goes wrong, you're going to be more excited, more nervous, more embarrassed because there's more people watching. Like, so you can't, in my opinion, you can't just treat a playoff game like it's just another game. Because you're lying. It's not like it's not another game. The kids know that. And so I think just trying to, in practice and preparing for that, you know, first playoff game, and then continuing throughout the time, is just to focus on being in the moment, having fun, even taking a step back during the pregame and having guys like, hey, turn around for a second. Let's just look at this environment. Like, soak this in for a second. Like, how cool is this? You got 1,000 people that came here to watch you play baseball today. This could be the last time that we as a group ever get to do this. Just soak this in for a minute. Because if we lose, if this is the last time, this will never happen again. We'll never be together again. We'll never have these same relationships again. Everything will be different from here on out. So just soak this in for a minute. Embrace this. And then throughout the game, keep embracing it. Play doesn't go well, embrace it, man. Just soak it in. Like, what a cool opportunity this is. And our trainer, the first couple years, she would do playoff pop. So that first practice before playoffs, she would show up in her little golf cart. She'd bring popsicles. We'd have playoff pops. And she doesn't know this probably, but she kind of ironically, just by bringing playoff pops, helped me in year one understand, oh, like, this is fun. Like, this should be fun. The kids should have fun with this and just embrace it. And so I think that's the biggest thing for us. We try to get scouting reports on opposing teams, but spray charts are so, like, it's high school ball. Like, who knows? You might have been throwing a soft lefty. We're going to throw a hard thrown righty. Like, how much does a spray chart really help us? Probably not that much. So like I mentioned before, we'll go off and try to find, like, video of a pitcher. Everything's online now. You got, you know, PBR. We have Baseball Northwest up here locally. There's video of most guys that you can find online and just get kind of a feel for what – here's what his release looks like. You can kind of get an idea of it. We'll kind of send that out in a message to the players. Sure. But that's the basic idea, is just embrace the fun, embrace that this could be it. This could be our last practice ever right here, right now. For some of you, the last baseball you ever play in your life. Like, let's just embrace this and enjoy it for what it is. And then obviously you hope that you win. Sure. And then you can do that same speech again tomorrow and keep doing that. But only one team gets to kind of enjoy that last win.
No, I like that a lot. So with that, I've got a couple of quick hitters for you before you go. And the first one is, what is something that you've learned lately that's made you better at your job?
So we have a kid. His name is Bailey. He'll turn 4 basically by the time people are listening to this. He will have just turned 4. He's gotten really big into golf lately on his own. He loves swinging a baseball bat and hitting balls. And so I think, oddly enough, the thing I'm learning right now is how to help a kid get better when he doesn't understand a word of what I'm saying. So like the typical example of like swings and misses big time, which is great. I love it. Swing hard and miss. That's awesome. We celebrate it. But also when he did that big swing, he didn't even see the ball at any point. Okay. So, you know, the typical, like, keep your eyes on the ball. And you've seen like the, you know, little funny videos of a kid, like, putting his eye literally on the ball. Okay. So how can I make this work for him? So like, hey, make sure you see the ball the whole time. Okay, cool. Have fun. Swing real hard. Great. And so it's like, I'm learning so much. Especially this summer, being with him every day of and all day, and all he wants to do is be outside and play. Just like, what can I help him with where it's still fun? In no way am I making it a chore or not fun, but how can I find like physical cues, verbal cues that help this 4-year-old understand what he needs to do in order to have more fun when he swings this bat again? And so it's like that same feeling now of like coaching. It's having me really think through coaching of like, dude, how can I talk to kids in a way that helps them achieve this outcome they want without filling their head with stuff? And I think the best person at doing this is Casey Fisk on Twitter. He has some of the coolest things he says on there where I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like, just pull the string back on your arrow. And I'm like, or on your bow. And I'm like, oh, dude, that makes so much sense. So I'm trying to like process through that right now, finding ways to say things to kids that makes them understand what they need to do without bogging them down with, you know, a bunch of mechanical stuff.
I'm with you. Second question is, what's a drill that your players love that we can steal from you?
A great one that kids love to do. We don't do it very often, maybe once or twice a year, but we just call it chicken because I don't think of a better name for it. But basically, like, if you're playing shortstop, I'm going to hit you ground ball and your other shortstop's going to be in front of you in the baseline. And his job is to kind of prevent you from seeing the ball for as long as he can without letting the ball hit him. And you need to field the ball and throw it to first base. And the kids, they love it because it's a lot of fun. It's an insane environment and it creates a lot of excitement and it's cool and interesting. And I'll never forget it. The first time we did it, we kind of did it for fun, just to do something fun at the end of our infield routine. And then the very next day in a game, it actually happened where a player kind of tried to screen our shortstop from getting a ball. And it was the coolest thing. It's the third out of the inning. I'll never forget it. Ryan Brown, he's a pitcher at, he just got drafted by the Oakland A's now. We pitched for Oregon State. He's our shortstop at the time. Fields it. Doesn't, you know, gets through the chicken guy, throws it to first, just a strike. And as everyone's coming in, we're all just laughing our tails off because like, oh my, like that worked. Like we literally just did that. So the guys love playing it because it's a lot of fun. And then, you know, ultimately at one point every 5 years, it might happen in a game. So, you know, you never know.
Oh, that's really good. So last question I got for you is, what is something that you implemented over time in your program that you feel like has made the biggest impact?
Well, I mentioned before getting rid of offensive signs. You know, I'd probably reiterate that, just allowing kids the freedom to play. I think that's one of the most important things we've ever done in our program. And like I said, we did it by accident, but I think it really gives kids freedom. I think the same thing, allowing our catchers to call pitches, has really changed things for us. It probably has cost us a game or two here and there, but I think over the long run, it teaches them a lot, makes them kind of gives them ownership, gives our pitchers an opportunity to shake off a sign if they don't feel comfortable throwing that pitch in that situation. And guys kind of learn a lot about themselves and how to compete. I don't think it's for every program. I don't think it's going to work for everybody and every coach, but I think for us, getting rid of offensive signs and then allowing our catchers to call pitches have made like tremendously positive impacts on our program and on our players.
I love that. Well, Max, I appreciate having you on, and I've loved, you know, getting to chat it up with you today. A podcaster, your mic sounds awesome. And so I before you go, though, can you give us some contact information? And then if there's anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners before you go, I'd love to hear it.
I'll give my Twitter. I hate my Twitter handle, but I made it when I was in college becoming a teacher. And so I tried to get Max Price, but somebody owns it and has never used it, basically. So I did Mr. Max Price. And so that's still what it is. But I don't like it, but I don't want to change it because I've said it to too many people too many times. So it's at Mr. Max Price. I think the big thing for me is if I'm thinking about anything else to like, kind of leave people with or let people have, I think just through my own experiences and then, you know, watching coaches I really love and admire and then having conversations with so many coaches, you know, from all across the country at all different levels and sports. I think one of the most important things is if you have a family, if you're married or, you know, have a serious person in your life or spouse or, and then especially when you add kids into it, I think it's really important to understand that your family has to always come first. And I think it's really hard for a lot of coaches because we want to spend and dedicate so much time to our programs. And it would be really easy to go to the field right now and take care of it, make it look better. But I have a priority in my life. And I think all of us should have that same priority if we have a family, to make our kids and our spouses the number one part of it. It doesn't mean you're not going to miss some stuff and be away from things. But I think you'll be a better coach and a better role model to the players that you have in your program if you allow yourself to treat your family with the number one priority. And so one of the things I did this year that I've never really done before is I missed a couple practices for some family stuff that we had going on, where I think in previous years, the old me would have been like, no, it's baseball practice. I'm so sorry I can't be there, but I got to focus on baseball. It's baseball right now. I think allowing yourself, making sure you have a culture where your assistant coaches know it's allowed, where if there's a day where you need to put your family first, you need to put your family first and be okay with allowing the baseball program to survive that day without you. And so I think that would be kind of where I'd want to leave people is just remember that your family is number one. And they will always be number one. There's not a heaven that's only designed for the high school baseball program you're currently in. Like, it's going to be okay if you're not there for today. They'll replace you in a minute if you ever quit or if they fired you. Like, you need to make sure that your family's your number one priority. And then I just say this, Jonathan, like, I don't know if you understand the impact you've had on baseball and the baseball coaching community. You might have an inkling of it, but what you've done over these last few years is a tremendous gift. And I think we a lot of times think of it as a gift to coaches, like, I'm so much better at coaching because I listen to all these great people that Jonathan's kind of exposed us to on his podcast. But I think the real impact that you're having is on student athletes and players, because they're the ones that are ultimately benefiting from all these people that you keep bringing on and all these conversations that you're kind of harnessing. And so the baseball world is going to feel the reverberations of your podcast and all the people you've had on forever. Like, there's no end to this, because as a coach, I'm learning something from the podcast you just had. My players are then being the beneficiaries of that. And then they're going to grow up and they're going to become coaches and their players are going to benefit from that. And it's going to keep going in perpetuity forever. Because at one point you decided, what the heck, let's put a microphone in front of me and bring a coach on and see what he has to say. And so I cannot thank you enough for what you've done for the baseball world. I have learned way more than I could ever write down. I've forgotten way more than I've ever imagined by listening to your podcast, and just what you've done is absolutely phenomenal. And so I just want you to know that I appreciate you having me on, but way more importantly, I just appreciate everything you've done for the baseball world, because you've made a huge difference. And like I said, it's going to be felt forever.
Thank you so much for listening to Ahead of the Curve. If you would do us a huge favor, leave a rating or review wherever you are listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone and tag us on social media. That would help us so much with growing the show and helping others to stay ahead of the curve.